Welcome back to the Hoops Temple podcast. Join with me first, Nate, as always, but special guest Kofi. How are you, man?
I'm doing great, man. A nice chill Sunday, you know, can't complain. How are you guys?
Doing fantastic.
Dude, I got power back. I know you're a Pistons guy, right, Kofi?
Yes, I am.
But you're not from Michigan.
Nope.
Okay. I was thinking you were a Michigan guy. I was like, man, we got hit with some tornadoes. I've got tornadoes twice in my life, and I've been without power for like the last 3 days. It's just been
really
been day, and then came on.
So I'm a Southerner. I grew up in North Carolina. I currently live in LA. So I grew up on like hurricane stuff, but North Carolina, we had like a couple of like big memorable hurricanes and stuff, but it's not as much as like the Floridas, the Louisiana style. And then last week I wasn't the go-to person for my friends about like, what do we do about Hurricane Hillary or something like that. But I was like, guys, don't go outside, please. Like, we can't.
Please don't try.
Don't. I saw TikToks of people playing in like the storm water, and I was like, please. Oh no, don't. That's just the one thing you're not supposed to do.
Oh God.
I gotta say, Nate is also drafting a fantasy football team right now. Multitasking, yes, to the max. You can't miss a fantasy football draft. I tell my girlfriend when those drafts are, I'm not available, we're not going out, can't go on dates, I'm not free that day. I have a team to pick.
It was supposed to be at 4, and then it was like, well, we don't have power. All right, we'll push till next week. And then everyone's power kind of ticked back on. We're like, all right, let's scramble, let's do it. And then just got thrust into this, and I have the number one pick in a 2QB league, a 12-man 2QB. Yeah, I see that face. That's how I felt when it was first announced. So
I don't think I've ever done a 2QB league. That's interesting to me.
How many people are in it, Nate?
12 of us, and I think we've already picked 6 quarterbacks in the first round.
Yeah.
12 is perfect. I think 12 is the perfect like for a fantasy league. I feel like once you get to like 14 and 16, the waiver stuff gets a little bit more like desolate, you know.
I'm currently running a massive 14 team dynasty league with huge benches. It's I picked up Romeo Doubs yesterday. It was a big, really big deal. Really big deal. breaking the waiver wire for sure. But Kofi, I gotta say, your videos are fantastic. Your content's great. We're all big fans. But the fumble dimension is some of my favorite stuff on the internet. I think the We Killed Basketball video belongs in the Library of Congress. Like it's classic stuff.
Dude, thanks. I appreciate you. I was so nervous making that first video for a couple of reasons. One, that was, I had just recently moved to New York at the time. I'm in LA now, but I had recently moved from DC to New York because SB Nation has two offices. They have the DC office, which is usually SB Nation, and then Vox.com, like, usually splits that office. And then the New York office was all the other like verticals, and that's where all the video stuff was, like the video studios. So I had just recently moved from being on the social media team to working with John's team. And that is a video that's based off of a article that John made years before that called NBA Y2K. And we came up with the premise for the show. I was like, why not have a great first video in terms of like get people familiar with the kind of stuff that we would be doing. And then like people would like be able to, and that's like my first video on the SB Nation YouTube channel, and that was nerve wracking for a while because I didn't know how I was going to be received by John Boy's fans. You know, I had no idea. I was like, oh man, if this turns out to be less than, because John Boy's has never missed content wise in his career, right? If I was the first miss and I'm on that, I'm cooked, right? As a debut. But I don't think I hadn't worked harder on a video. I was such a perfectionist for that entire video because I was like, I have to have this strong debut and let's keep it going, you know?
It's such an awesome concept. And I remember the article. The article is hysterical. And I remember crying laughing after watching that happen. But I mean, years ago, I'm sure when I saw that video, I remade that. And I went into 2K16 and I made the draft classes with all the horrible players and rebuilt it. And it was so much fun. And it's something people should try just at least once just to see it. I ended up with Miles Turner at the end as the last player.
Really?
He was the last player alive. And he averaged, I think it was like 40 points and 90 rebounds. It was a blast. But
Oh man, it's so fun. I like the thing I like about the series is that the show ideas are like anyone with so much too much time on their hands can do the video idea. But you'll no matter what I do, you'll get a different result. That's what I think is the cool part about that kind of video, where it's like, hey, if someone does the same kind of video, I've had people I've had people do videos like this and people like tag me and be like, oh, it's a fumble to mention. I'm like, no, it's not. This idea is fun. Like, go do it. Like, I want to see what happens in your universe, in your world, and what happens in your sim, because that's like a cool part of the like the storytelling kind of thing. So I'm always like happy to see those kind of videos, those kind of experiments, and keeping sports video game content fresh, because Lord knows we have to do it ourselves. So
absolutely, absolutely, and I really appreciate that positive outlook. And you're massive into the sports video gaming and all the old 2Ks and stuff. And for a long time, I collected those as well back in on the PS. I still have a PS3 that functions, and PS3 controllers, and onto the PS2 and whatnot. And but I gotta admit, and this is an embarrassing thing to admit in front of both of you, I play 2K16 every. I still that's play the, that game. That's the only that's 2K I play, and I will never move on.
You just stopped there. I mean, that's totally fair. I pop in a 2K10 all the time.
That's great.
Just to do it.
It's a great game. I play the new ones, and I bought the new ones. I buy them every time, and I play for a bit, and I'm like, I just can't. I can't. There's something about it. It's like, think of that era. It's pre-KD Warriors, Kobe's still in the league, Duncan's still in the league, Garnett's still in the league. I can build whatever rosters I want. I have my own imaginary leagues and my own creative rosters that it's a new experience every day.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I just went to a retro video game store yesterday, spent $140 and bought like 20 games. And it's like Madden 2002, like NBA Live 2002. And the back of the disc for NBA Live 2002 was just like, new franchise mode. I was like, oh my God, wow, look how far we've come. It's been 20 plus years. And like, they just birthed a whole bunch of, like, I think that in like they birthed a whole generation that just like loves the fantasy GM aspect, the sandbox aspect of sports games. And like, I, as an only child, I didn't have any like siblings or anything. Like, that was what I would do, is I would do I was a big fantasy draft for whatever 2K, whatever an NBA Live we were playing. I was like, okay, I'm going to get this team. I'm going to draft like all 6'10 players that could shoot and see what happens. And, you know, they just go on and on from there.
I was about to pick on you guys, but then I was like, oh yeah, I still have NBA Courtside 2 for the N64 that I'll boot up every once in a blue moon, because it's got Vince Carter and T-Mac on the Raptors together. It's like a 90, just, it's a fantastic game.
That's the console I don't have. And I'm just like, there are certain consoles that escaped me, and like, I never grew up on them. I never played them, because I think my first console I got was when I was like 8 or 9, and I didn't have like any older siblings where it's like, oh, here, have my NES, have my N64, have my whatever. And whenever I see N64, I'm like, maybe I'll do it one day. Like, it's
do it. Pull the trigger. Everything is broken, but in the best way. Like,
I the controls, the control, I just look at the controller, yeah. And I'm like, oh, I would not have a fun time, but like,
what's wrong with the three handled controller? What's wrong with that?
You play with a friend.
Just multitasking.
Yeah.
Do you guys have a favorite 2K My Career?
I think it's 2K10. I think that's why I go back to 2K10 a lot. The reason why is because that, I feel like everything was earned. Because in NBA 2K10, the My Career, you started in Summer League and you were basically a 40 overall. And if you weren't good, it wasn't like you're like the newer 2Ks, like you're just congratulations, you're on an NBA team immediately. But on the newer, on the older 2K10s, you would go to the D League. You would just be there. Yeah. Back in the former, you know, but you would go there. You'd be on the Fort Wayne Mad Ants playing point guard and trying to get up to the, but by the time at the end of the season, if you get promoted to the NBA, it feels earned. It feels like you do all the drills. There's no microtransaction shortcut. Everything feely, like you were actually putting in hours doing mid-range basketball drills and trying to be the best player. And that was what was so fascinating to me about it.
I totally get that. My favorite, and I honestly haven't played them recently, I'll be honest, but the the 2K14 My Career. What I liked about that one is I felt like with time, and the same thing you're saying, with time, I could get my player. It's like a 90 overall just off of playing the game, where now I feel like I boot it up and I'll put a few weeks in and I'm like, I am a 75 overall. Like, I'm not going anywhere. Like, I see how much VC would cost to become a 90. And I'm like, that's never happening. I make 200 VC a game or something. I'm not getting to that point. But I feel like you could just play 2K14. Also, they had the glitchy half spin. If you post someone up and then you did the spin, you could dunk on anybody. And I think like 14-year-old me was fucking into that. I was like, hell yeah, I actually don't have to be good at this.
And they had like the great moves that like were cheesable, but nobody was complaining that much. I feel like they were like, oh, this is just fun, you know, but then it got to like the My Park court and all of that. And it's like, oh, this is cheesable. This is not fun gameplay anymore. Yeah, you know?
For sure. From NBA 2K to real life basketball. Nate, you live in Michigan. You go to Pistons games. Kofi, you are a Pistons fan, but where does that Pistons fandom start for you? Because you said earlier, not from Michigan.
So my mom is a chemical engineer professor, but she's also a public speaker. And she would always travel around and just like whenever she had a tradition, whatever, wherever she was, she would get me either a hat or a shirt or like some memorabilia of like the sports team that's in town. So that's why I am a Mets, Bengals, Pistons fan. You know, I would just
Are you all right?
You get
oh my god.
Yeah, well, I'm all over the place.
Brutal too.
Oh yeah, it's brutal. It's way more fun though, honestly. I think it's way more fun to root for perennially bad teams, because when they're good, then it's like, oh, we earned this, you know.
Yeah.
But I think the first memorabilia was just like either a Ben Wallace shirt or something Ben Wallace, and I was like, oh, I'm in. So that was it, because neither of my parents were NBA fans or anything. You know, my dad immigrated from Ghana when he was 18, and then he would just like root for whatever team he was living in at the time. But neither of them like played basketball or like grew up like watching like professional sports like that. So I had to like figure that out on my own. So Detroit it was, and we're still here.
What year did you get into the Pistons? Like you said, Ben, but is this later stages, Ben, or did you get to enjoy the championship?
I got to enjoy the championship. I had the Lakers back when. So I was VCRing, because I didn't have cable, but I would be able to like. We had a TV that you could VCR and record the TV stuff on the VCR, and that's how I taught myself how to play basketball. Was I would like have these games. It would be like the Kings Lakers series I have on VCR, because what I would do is I would be like, okay, I want to play basketball, so I would like watch the moves and just try to do what they do. So yeah, I was able to watch the classic, because that's my favorite NBA on ABC era. Mm-hmm. Actually, like that's the score bug, the intro music and all of that. I love all of that. So I was able to watch the championship, and then I didn't know that those don't come around that often. You just had no idea. You're just like, oh, this is fun. Can't wait to try again or do it again. No, that's not.
Yeah. It's been a rough little drought. Unfortunately, my family moved to Michigan that year. My parents met going to MSU, so like we've got deep Michigan roots. We'd moved out to California, Pasadena, and I became a Lakers fan. We moved to Indiana right before the 2000 finals. That was great timing to move to that state. It's like, we beat you. Then we moved to Lansing, Michigan in 2003. So it's like, oh great, we're here. Hey, finals again. Oh no, we lost this one. I'm the new kid that's a Lakers fan, and now I'm in the bad place.
It's been quite the drought for the Pistons since then, but after winning the 04 one, I'm sure you're like, oh man, this is great. Can't wait to win some more. We'll collect some more championships, but it's been tough. But just looking at the state of the Pistons now, and I wanted to focus on, I'm a Kings fan, looking at Pistons, those familiar with the Pistons, how'd you feel heading into the last year's draft, looking at Keegan Murray, looking at Jaden Ivey, really looking at that lottery not going the Pistons' way? What's going through your head?
I think for me, the fact that we had Cade made me feel so much better about whoever. I feel like Cade is a player where I was like, it's rare to like, for me, I, as a Pistons fan, it hadn't been a time until like we drafted K where I was like looking at the rest of the draft and like being like number five pick or whatever pick we were. I was like, oh, I can see anybody playing and fitting with Cade. And I think that that's such a great and like new feeling to have as just like I didn't feel like slighted, be like, oh, the fifth pick or whatever. You know, I was like, okay, Keegan Murray, cool. Jaden Ivey, cool. I can see them both. I can see it both, you know. And it was better. It was good getting that number one pick finally, because the Pistons would just like refuse to just like hit the full reset for a while and just get like the 8 to 12 range. And it was good seeing like a player that, and I'm so excited for Cade's upcoming season, but it was so excited to like see a player. And I'm like, oh, I'm at ease because like I can see Cade and Ivy. I can see Cade and Ivy. I can see Keegan Murray and all that. But, you know, I think the draft worked out well for both teams, so I'm not like complaining.
Were you heartbroken to not have the lottery luck this year? What, the Pistons had the worst record.
We deserved. I was like, oh, there's too much good happening right now. Like I couldn't see it. Like you know when you like you go to the lottery like and you can like see him holding up the number. I was like, I can't see it this year. I'm sorry. Rip Hamilton's there. I don't know. Or was it Ben Wallace or Rip Hamilton? No, it was Rip. I think it was Rip this year. That yeah, like showed so. Up and I was like, oh, we got Ben Wallace like the year we got number one. I was like, where's Ben? No. Like lottery luck is so funny when it's like all those people that are like, oh, this person's here, we're cooked, you know. So that was like a fun thing. But I was like Wembanyama and Cade just like felt too good to be true, and I was like, this doesn't feel, I don't buy it, right? You're like, this is too much.
I felt like you guys almost deserved it. Like, I mean, going back, you guys got Sekou Doumbouya, French. You got Killian Hayes, French. Felt like you guys were preparing. You're like, all right, we got this French guy coming down. We're going to bring in some of his countrymen. Make sure that we
played
got-
it. We had a game in France this season, I think.
Yeah,
you guys were like, It was like, yeah, we were doing the decoration. I was like, you can change the team name for all I care. Like the Detroit Victors, man. I kept tweeting at Wembanyama just like jokes. I was like, what jersey number do you wear? Every time the Pistons just get waxed, I was like, yo, what jersey number do you want, bro?
Make it happen.
I'll make it myself. Thread a needle, man.
For real.
In the offseason, me and Nate make our top 100 players heading into this current season. We did the top 50 recently. We had Cade at 43. We had him closer to 30 last season before a pretty crushing injury. He's right behind Banchero, but he's like creeping up on DeMar DeRozan. You seem to be very, very excited about Cade Cunningham. Maybe we're not hesitant for the long run, but just this next season. What do you see in Cade that's so exciting? And for Nate, the same question.
I think the thing about Cade that I see is that I see a lot of, I call Cade Luka Light all the time, like free trial Luka, you know, because it's not like, it's not the same, but you see like some parts of the gameplay where it's like, oh, look at Cade, like just give Cade the ball, let him make the right play, like get him, make him right decisions, you know. And I see that a lot. And I think that his like passing is underrated in some circles. And I feel like people haven't seen Cade in a while because of the injury. And like also the Detroit Pistons are not the most visible NBA team. So I feel like even if like that like just matched on top of each other is just like what I'm excited for, like the comeback. You know, I saw him working out with the Team USA runs, the off season runs. And I know that I'm not going to take those and be like, see guys, see, this is what, but it's just really cool to see him back on the floor, healthy, you know. Hopefully he's worked on the jumper a little bit, you know. And I think that Cade is a player that he definitely just makes everybody around him better. And I'm so excited for the Cade to Durin, the chemistry, Cade to Durin chemistry. And like, it's cool to be excited about Detroit basketball again. That's all. Thompson. Yeah. I'm so excited for that. I'm excited for Sasser. You know, I'm excited for like, there's just so much to be like, I'm like, yes, fun basketball, you know. It's like cool. Yeah, I'm over the moon.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird comparison, but I always kind of feel like Cade has a little bit of Deron Williams to his game. Like Deron was shorter, but he had like the stockier guard. I liked how he drove and attacked, and yeah, I don't know that Cade's quite shown that level of passing yet. like elite point guard passing, but I think he can get there.
Yeah.
And I'm just excited to see what he's going to bring this next year. Hopefully he's fully healthy and the team kind of fits. We've got a good guard rotation between him, Ivy, and then kind of wing with Assur. How are you feeling about the bigs? I mean, Jalen Duren, excited?
Marvin I'm Bagley, excited about Jalen. I'm excited about Jalen Duren. Dude, the log jam, man. I don't know. it's so weird because it's like, okay, Stewart gets the extension. Okay, we have Duren, we have Wiseman, we have Bagley. And I'm like, what? I'm like, first of all, give Duren is my first priority and will always be my first priority. That is a grown man, and that kid, dude's like 20, just manhandling everybody. Like, give, and like, he has good chemistry with Cade, it seems. And so he's my first priority. After that, I don't know. Like, Stewart has made definite strides as like a like shooter, and I feel like if he gets to become that like stretch four, and not like a, I'm not asking for much, but I'm asking for like, hey, maybe just so stretch the floor a little bit. I like a little floor spacing with my fours between Bagley and Wiseman. I don't know, man. It's just like I have the agenda where I'm like, Wiseman's a good player, like, but then I'm like, but he gets in the way of, if he gets in the way of Duren, I'm not gonna be happy about that, you know. So I feel like finding that right balance, because there's just a whole lot of potential among the four, like among that, but it's just like tough because I'm like, we're not doing the Greg Monroe, Andre Drummond, Josh Smith thing again. I will turn off my TV. I did not like that. That is the worst. That I think that era was just so sad to me. I was just like, dude, we can't.
I definitely had more questions about that era later on, but I wanted to touch on the Bagley piece, because as a Kings fan that's been broken and beaten so many times, that was like the peak of my sadness about that kind of stuff, because Luka's sitting right there. I was so high on Luka, you could have gotten a contact high just hanging out with me. And then when we took Bagley, I went to the first summer league game. He dunked on Mo Wagner. Everything was great. The attitude and the shitty basketball ended up being the end of him. And when he got traded to the Pistons, so many TikTok comments were telling me that he looks good on the Pistons and he's going to figure it out. He's actually kind of good now. Is he any good, or is he still just as bad as I remember?
That's the thing. It's just like, you see with all of these like Pistons, like, you with Wiseman, with Bagley, you see a flash. You see like a flash in the pan, but it's not like a consistent ride. It's like, oh, up, 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 down, up, 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 down, you know? But for me, I will always believe, as long as they're on my team, I will always be like, hey, this is my guy. I've seen the good. I can believe in the good, you know, I whatever. But again, Marvin Bagley has like the defensive issues, you know, and that kind of thing. And
I think it's great that he's.
I just want the team to play like. I just want the basket. Like, I want the offense to just look fluid. That's basically it. I don't want there to be like much. Like, if it gets to Bagley and then he holds on to the ball and the offense stalls, I don't want any offense like stallers. So I hope that like that gets out of the way. And I feel like Bagley, and sometimes Wiseman does that too. You're just like, okay, is this a good offensive possession? I'm not sure, but we're also in the let's figure it, like hope they figure it out mode, because we're still in the, like the Wiseman, get Wiseman some reps phase. And I think with Bagley, we know what we can get right now at this point, but I always will have that optimism, be like, oh dude, you were a number two pick for a reason. People saw something in you, you know, I hope that we can get that out of you. But if not, we have Duren and Stewart, I guess, you know? So
yeah, it's always good to take a gamble on some of those guys. I mean, hey, sometimes it doesn't pan out, but you saw the talent there at one point with them. Everyone was excited. If it's just a situational thing and you can kind of revive it, it's picking up things cheap. It's, you know, it's TikTok furniture flipping. Let's buy that 70s cabinet and, you know, refurbish it.
It was the right thing to do, though, for Detroit to pick up someone like Bagley. I thought it was great because he can make mistakes on a bad team. But in Sacramento, we're like actually trying to make the playoffs that year. Like, we were good enough to be in that conversation. It's like, oh my god, like, please Marvin, stay in front of one guy one time. Watching him post up, I had like my hands in my face, like, we literally are running post ups like it's 2006. I can't believe like this guy's our like our second overall pick. He's just so slow-footed, and I hope he makes all those mistakes and develops and all that. But yeah,
was that the Luke Walton years? Yeah,
yeah, I suffered through that, and him, Bagley, and I had like six brain cells between the two of them, and it was a mess.
How much do you think it was like just Luke Walton versus like Bagley? You know, I feel like the Pistons are. I love what they're doing, like buying low on all of these like high, because that's like the best way. Because like we're not going to get the big free agents. This is the best way to like, it's like bargain bin hunting, bargain bin shopping, you know.
It could have been Walton. But it could have been part of it. I didn't like him. I booed him at every game I went to. My dad always said he'd be like, no, they're saying Luke, like Luke. And I'm like, no, they are not. I'm booing him. We're all booing them. Like, he's not popular. I couldn't tell you the direct thing, but honestly, I think if anything, Walton wanted Bagley not to suck so much and have a better attitude, and Bagley wanted to suck and have a shitty attitude. And when that's the impasse, it's kind of tough. You almost have to get out of both parties, and that's what we did. But we won the trade. We won the trade because Trey Lyles is actually pretty good.
I can't hate on that. Yeah, I wanted you guys to win that Warriors series so bad.
Thank you. You guys play
so fun.
Thank you.
Like, I just love like how fast you guys. I love fast basketball. That's me to it. I'm like, yes.
I was at game one of that series, just electric. And my family went to the rest of the series. My dad and brother went to game seven and got their hearts broken, but came out of them all. Looking at the future, I was going to say, one of my questions was going to be, are you excited about the state of Pistons basketball? And obviously the answer to that is very much yes. But have you been excited before, and how did you get your heart broken? Any Stanley Johnson hope? Any KCP dreams of winning?
I was so high on Stanley Johnson. Like, I, as someone that, like, I grew up watching Ball Is Life, the Hoop mixtapes, and Matter Day followed. They documented Stanley Johnson since he was a freshman. Like, there was an entire like mixtape where it's him just trying, like, it's him, you know, going from freshman to senior. And there's like a whole documentary on YouTube where it like showcases like he's working out at 5 a.m. and all. I was like, this is the guy. This is it. And then he had that season in Arizona. I was like, this is still, I'm with it. I'm on board. You know, so when we got him at 8, I was like, wow, what a steal. And then, you know, it just doesn't work out. But I feel like some of those times where the Pistons like smoke a draft pick, like it's not 100% on the player. I feel like sometimes, cause I've been doing this series where you like look at, it's like called Draft Picks Gone Bad. I'm like trying to figure out. And sometimes I'll go through like newspaper clippings, or sometimes I'll go through like, oh, this, there's a new head coach that didn't even want this player, period, you know, and so that's not going to go well. And I feel like Stanley, and we just like, just the development factor, I was like, dang, because I saw the tools. I was like, the tools are here. It's just who's sharpening the tools? Are the tools even being sharpened, you know? But yeah, I was really high on that.
I was looking at Johnson's rookie year just to see what he's up to, and he's in a really awkward spot, almost the same kind of for Bagley, which is, this is a 44-win Pistons team. They end up getting swept in the first round. It's 44-38, like I said, and you're with Marcus Morris and Tobias Harris and Andre Drummond, and Brandon Jennings is still around, and it's like almost kind of good enough where you don't want the rookie playing, but not good enough where like he's learning valuable life lessons.
We've had so many rosters like that. We've had so many rosters like that where it's like we're just like trying to win 38 to 44 games or something, or, and it's just like, I don't know, because you look at some of these rosters and you're just like, look at all the players that have played for the Pistons and then gone and left somewhere else, and then like immediately, like not immediately got better, but I'm like, oh, look at you guys contributing like more winning basketball. That's sick. I wish that was on our squad. You know, it's just like, you know, KCP, Bruce Brown, you know, Luke Kennard is one of the best shooters in the league and all of that. Like, they were all on the Pistons. Like, Spencer Dinwiddie is like fine. Like, he was on the Pistons, you know. It's just like funny because it's like the roster construction of the Pistons sometimes is just so awkward year in and year out. That's why I'm glad that we got Cade, because it's like, oh, this player can make it, like he can like smooth out the roster a little bit by just being there. But like watching like Andre Drummond, Brandon Jennings, like all these players like try to figure it out, and then there's no room, like you said, there's no room for the rookies, you know, it's really interesting. And I'm just like, every year I'm like, when will we learn? Like, we're not gonna like 44 wins is not going to do it for anybody. And it took a long, I feel like it took a long time for us to like be like, hey, we can't do this anymore. Like we can't, this is not sustainable.
Yeah. There was that strong push for a while, the Andre Drummond era, where it was just like, hey, if we can maybe get a piece around him. And I was like, no. The problem is our best player is Andre Drummond. You can't build. Did you ever have faith in Drummond? I know I've got friends that were like, Drummond could be the best center in the league. I was like, no, that's not going to happen.
So there was this one thing, I forget. I think this was a Twitter investigation or a Reddit investigation where someone was like, hey, is Andre Drummond only have all the rebounding stats because he's rebounding his own misses? And that just like snapped. And I was like, dude, oh man, you just ruined Andre Drummond for me permanently. Like it didn't even matter if you were right or wrong. It was just like, now that I'm looking at it, I'm like, yeah, you're averaging like 16, 17, 18 rebounds per game. But how many of those are like you playing like wall ball with the backboard, you know? It's just like, so that like I saw the thing about Andre Drummond also is that I felt like every year Andre Drummond would come back and like the first couple of weeks, like try a new thing. Like he would, there was that one year where he just like started shooting threes and we were like, is this a thing now? Okay. All right. That's fine. And in every year just be like, okay, never mind. Like it's cool.
I want to imagine you're a rookie. You've worked so hard. You've learned basketball at its purest. You've gone through college. Like you went to Duke or something, Coach K. You get to the Pistons and it's Andre Drummond post-ups, Brandon Jennings mid-range jumpers, and Josh Smith threes. And you're like, what the fuck is going on here? Like, is this professional basketball? Like, I clearly am like way out of the loop and all of the good habits you have fall apart.
I feel like whoever was running, if there wasn't like whoever was running the analytics department was just having an awful time. Like, because Josh Smith is one of the best finishers at the rim, like in like statistically at one point it was like from 0 to 3. I think there's a season where from 0 to 3 feet, Josh Smith was like 71%. And I was like, that's great. What percentage is he actually taking there? And it's like, oh, here's the bad news, man. It's like, I'm like, oh, dang, bro. Like those mid-range jumpers and those threes, bro. I'm like, dude, it worked in 2K for a bit, but like when he got to the real basketball, it just wasn't sustainable, man.
While the Warriors were figuring out how to perfect basketball, statistically, analytically, how to run the most perfect team, the Pistons were in another universe charting up Josh Smith threes. It's interesting. And honestly, on top of that is the Greg Monroe piece. Like they had all these guys and like he was also there. All these left-handers in one space, but none of them with spacing abilities.
Dude, I will always, as a left-handed basketball player, I'm always like, dude, if you're a left-handed basketball player, there's like odds, like I love De'Aaron Fox, like just off of the left-handed basketball principle, you know, and like seeing Greg Monroe, I was like, dude, I think there's something there, right? And then, but then you pair him across from Andre Drummond and I'm like, oh man. And then my thing about Detroit is that I feel like for years and years, I always look at the roster. And I'm like, dude, if there's like two more shooters, man, that was like for like years on end. I'm like, dude, if only two of these guys could like shoot a little bit better, I'd be like, please, just a bit,
just
like every year.
I want to talk on Nate. Do you have any comments before I move on?
Oh, I was just trying to think who's been the best shooter for the Pistons. Like
Joe Harris. No, was he at the Pistons?
He like, was for a hot second, but I don't.
We had Kennard for a bit, but I don't, yeah. Like, but Kennard
Blake
wasn't
Griffin.
Like, yeah,
they really haven't had like a dead eye guy. I mean, you know,
just Kennard. And then, I feel like we're missing somebody for sure. I mean,
Kentavious Caldwell-Pope was a shooter, but it's not, I'm like thinking like a Korver or a Capono or Vladimir, like some of the guys that like, hey, you just double them. Or not double them, but you can't let them shoot. A JJ Redick, someone whose like whole purpose of basketball playing is
for
just
sure.
Catch and shoot.
Dude, I think the last one's Kennard.
He ended up turning out pretty well, though. I was out on Kennard and then this revival, and I think he's actually pretty good in the Grizzlies. Another left-hander. And I want to make one more comment on that era. When it happened, I was in on it because for the Josh Smith and Brandon Jennings thing because they were left-handed. I'm like, they figured it out. No one's going to stop these guys. They're shooting from the left side. But I want to talk about the good Pistons times ending because you have this incredible 2000s run. You win titles. You go to all these conference championship games. You're the best team in the East. And in 08, you trade for Allen Iverson. It's Billups and McDyess and another guy. It didn't matter. But that's for Iverson. What did you think of that trade at the time?
Well, as someone that was a huge fan of Allen Iverson, like I was, what, 12 or 13? Like, I was like, oh, yeah, definitely. Absolutely. But then I didn't know which, like, I didn't know that this was the version of Allen Iverson we were getting. And I was like, oh, man, well. And that, as soon as the bill was traded and like, that's why everyone, whenever I feel like when LeBron scored like 25 in a row or whatever, like that's when it was over. I was like, okay, fine. You know, that's what I had always been like, okay. People always say that and like show like, this is one of the best moments. I'm like, no, I hate this moment, man. This is where it all started to, I was like, dang.
Yeah.
And then Billups going, I feel like I don't know what the Pistons thought Iverson was going to do, but it's definitely not what they expected, which it is what it is at that point. But
I asked Aaron to put that into the rundown, this question into the rundown, because early high school, we're trying to think when that happened. I was really big on this. I was like, the Pistons need an offensive firepower. This is going to be the punch. And it just, on paper, it seemed like the right idea, but personality wise, temperament, the leadership that Billups brought and then took with him to Denver was just completely irreplaceable. And it was just such a turning point moment for me as like a sports fan of, ooh, okay, maybe it's more than just skills. It's actually personalities and performance and all of that.
I think it was also
matters.
I think it was also the thing I'm looking at it. And that was the only year of the Michael Curry era where it was like Flip Saunders had just got done coaching and then Michael Curry coaches for a year and then it goes to like John Q and then the instability just like begins. So I can totally understand why that wasn't going to like, just wasn't going to happen.
It's the end of the Joe Dumars tenure of general manager. And he got really into per 36 numbers and was like, Charlie Villanueva is going to be the next Tim Duncan. Cause they're per 36 and 09 was the same. And Ben Gordon and just a dark turn.
Dude, all of the smoked draft picks.
Yeah.
It's just that era. You're just like, wow.
What a hilarious time for general managers, though, for a guy to be like, no, per 36 numbers. Like, this is the future. This is as deep as analytics get. There's no true shooting. There's no, like, no, you should shoot these threes or whatever. It's like, nah, if he's out there for 36 minutes, I think he actually has good production. That's as deep as it goes.
It's whenever a new stat gets rolled out, you will see someone buy into it hard. And like that. That time, unfortunately, was the Pistons general manager, and it just wrecked the good thing.
What do you mean, new stats per 36? No. You don't need like a NASA scientist to figure that out for you.
I can tell you as a sports fan, per 36 was never talked about until like the early 2010s. Like 09 to like 13 was like, oh man, hey, if we do per 36, Manu's as good as Kobe, and like all of this, people just started... People just got really into per 36, and I'm like, this is not how this works.
And there's a great Charles Barkley quote, and I don't know if I've ever seen it since, but I saw it on TV, and he was just like, I don't care about per 36. He's not out there for 36 minutes. He's not good enough to play that long. This is stupid.
God, that's the third best Charles Barkley quote I've heard this week. He's just been on a tear of quotes.
He really has.
Did you guys hear his one about France?
No, I heard the one about Curry.
I heard the Curry one.
I heard the Curry one. I haven't heard the France one.
So he's on Bill Simmons' podcast, and he's talking about how great it would be if some other country won. He's like, it's not going to be the end of the world if USA doesn't win the FIBA World Championship. You know, it'd be great if some third world country won. Like, can you imagine if France won?
Oh, no.
I don't trust his geography very much.
It gets better because Bill corrects him, and Bill's like, did you just call France a third world country? Like, oh, my bad. Imagine if Germany won.
Just digging deeper.
Just double down.
Like, who he play for, except it's just the map of the globe.
Barkley knows these teams for when he played them in the Olympics. He's like, oh, those guys are terrible. Like, this is clearly underdeveloped countries. They're not very good at basketball.
And then not to go on too much of a tangent, but I just finished reading his book. You want to know the best Barkley quote from this book?
What is it?
It's him talking to AC Green, who, you know, is a very devout religious man. And he goes up to AC and he's like, man, if you think God's so good, why didn't he give you a jump shot?
That's the funniest man. That's the funniest man in sports TV, honestly.
Bar none.
Man. That's really good. Yeah. A great thing from my brother, actually. My brother Evan, huge fan of your stuff, Kofi, of the secret base stuff. He asked, and this is a quote: "What, if any, cultural impacts did the Bobcats have on North Carolina?"
Zero.
Zero. None at all.
None at all, dude. I lived in Raleigh, so I know that John and I we did a Dorktown documentary on like the people called The People You Pay to Be in Shorts. It's a documentary on the worst the Bobcats seven win year. And as someone in Raleigh, North Carolina, growing up, I never saw any Bobcats merch. Like, because every NBA fan that was remotely in North Carolina either missed the Hornets or just like was just like, you saw the logo of the Bobcats and were like, I'm not getting on board with this. This is horrendous, you know. Also, the thing about North Carolina is that it's such a college basketball state, right? It's such a college basketball state. You have Duke, you have UNC, you have NC State, you have Wake Forest, you have even App State, you know, all of these schools that you're not, if your NBA team isn't good, you have other priorities, right? You know, I'm happy that LaMelo Ball is exciting and that the Charlotte Hornets have the most exciting play-by-play announcer, I feel like. But when the Bobcats, you know, they were, it just wasn't enough to move the needle, and they never landed a player, I feel like, enough to like just drive in seats. You know, they would always sell out when Chris Paul went to town because Chris Paul grew up there. You know, when it was like there was a season where the most exciting play came from Steph Curry when he played at Davidson, because they also used that court. You know, it was like Steph Curry hitting like the longest like three and then like LeBron's on the sideline or something like that. I'm like, that this is way more entertaining than anything the Charlotte Bobcats have offered all season. So no cultural, like, I've been looking for a Bobcats jersey, actually. So
I do love the Bobcats. Love some Bobcats. Just a quick note. When I was a kid, I thought Gerald Henderson was really good because he had that one dunk where he like threw it in, and I'm like, that guy's crazy athletic. Like, there's something there.
I had a theory on Michael Jordan's like drafting theory, where like I think that Michael Jordan for a time was like, if you played at Duke or UNC, come to Charlotte. Like, he would just draft, like, he'd draft Gerald Henderson, Raymond Felton, Sean May was there, you know, or yeah. it's either he was just like watching the NCAA tournament and was just like, this guy's good. Let's pick him. And it's like not thinking about the NBA game at all, just being like, okay, this dude good. And it just never worked out.
He put a ton of stock in that NCAA tournament. I remember Tyler Hansbrough and like Jordan being all over Tyler.
I was like, again?
Yeah.
Sorry. No rush.
Electricity's not been my friend this week.
I'll talk about Psycho T.
I grew up a Duke fan, so Tyler Hansbrough is the player, college basketball player I hated the most, bar none. But yeah. It's not even close, dude. And I know that Duke has like a lot of hateable characters. You know, you had the Redick, you had Kyle Singler, Grayson mm-hmm. Allen, all of that. But dude, Psycho T, man, because he was good all 4 years, bro.
How long does he have to be in the NBA for you to kind of forgive his college hatred? Do you ever get to that point? Never.
Dude, there was the March Madness coverage this year, and he was like on one of the desks, and I was like, oh man, he's back. Yeah, he's like And as someone in sports media, it's like all fun and games now. But like the child like Duke fan in me was just remembering. I was like, man, that man was aught. That man never missed a mid-range like turnaround ever, bro. It was unreal for 4 years.
Just haunted you. I feel like someone feels the same way about Drew Timmy. I'm not sure who hates Gonzaga, but someone's like, get Drew Timmy out of the fucking league. Like, I can't deal with this guy anymore.
The Gonzaga hate is so interesting sometimes, because it's like, everyone's like, no, they've never won a championship. Oh, whatever. And I'm like, hey man, they get as close as they get. Like, a lot of it's the hardest tournament to win a championship, I feel like, you know, it's so tough. The fact that like some of these college coaches have won multiple in like a 68 team tournament now.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to like discount that Yeah, one game elimination. Like, I'm not going to discount getting to the national championship or getting to the Final Four. Like, these are all great runs. I feel like people just don't like Gonzaga sometimes. You know?
I get it. Well, I had one just final quick question for you. And thanks so much for being here. The last question is, you're often in fun places when you record on your TikToks. You're not just in at your house. You're walking around. You're on the beach. You're doing something fun. What's your favorite unconventional recording?
Probably the lake, I got to say. I started doing them because I was in North Carolina, like visiting my parents, you know, and I was like, I had all the setup and I was like, dude, what if I just go outside and record and do all this? You know, what if I change it up? And I feel like the background, I'm someone that always pays attention to like the video mood. I know that I'm not like a yelling sports commentator. I'm not like a, oh my God, like, but if I was doing that and like, if I was yelling and there's like piano in the background, it wouldn't flow. Right. So I was like, okay, let's do the lake. Let's do some piano music. Let's make sure that we have this calm brand, because I am pretty like calm when it comes to just like sports recording and all of that. So the lake was really cool. And then we went to the beach for a day and I was like, let me just bring my equipment there too, because North Carolina has so many great places to shoot. Like a lot of places have a lot of great places to shoot, but North Carolina, I was like, oh, this is like, there are the lakes that I know. There are places in the state that I'm familiar with. Like I grew up, I'm like, I can shoot here. I can shoot here. I can shoot here. Versus like LA, I'm like, can I shoot here? I thought it was a good idea I went to like the Hollywood, like there's a park near like the Hollywood sign. I thought I was like, yeah, no one would ever think about it. And I get there, I'm like, there's like hundreds of people there. I'm like, yeah, I'm an idiot. What am I thinking, bro?
Oh, I'll have to try going outside some of these times. My TikTok light, like the thing illuminating my face, is not one single light, but it's two lights combined hanging on by a nail. It balances precariously in front of me. Listen, they don't sell the one that I like anymore. I'm at a desk. I needed a certain height. They don't sell that one anymore. They're either like 10 really? Feet tall or they're way too tiny. So I combined the two. Maybe some natural lighting will be good for me. But Kofi, thank you so much for being here. Where can the people find you?
Thanks so much for having me. You can follow me on Twitter at Kofi, KOFIE. You can subscribe to my YouTube channel, Kofi Y. And then my Twitch at Kofi Y, TikTok at Kofi Y. And I think that's it. Oh, sorry. I also started up a YouTube channel called Sleepy Sports. It's like my secret YouTube channel. So I have that as well. But
I'll have to go check that out. Very cool.
Yeah, give them the undercover scoop.
Thanks for having me again.
Yeah. Of course.